This episode of the Axel Crit Podcast is brought to you by Bambi. Only Bambi gives you a dedicated HR manager for just $99 a month. Get your free HR compliance audit at Bambi.com. That's BAMBEE.com/accidentalcreative. This episode is also sponsored by Policy Genius. You could save 50% or more by comparing quotes and feel good knowing your loved ones would be taken care of if anything were to happen. Go to PolicyGenius.com to get started. Hey everyone, welcome to the Axel Crit Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I'm your host. I'm also the author of a bunch of books, including the new book, The Motivation Code, which is available now wherever books are sold or at motivationcode.com. I don't know about you, but I'm feeling a bit of a wave of optimism right now. I feel like we're kind of starting to turn the corner. The creative juices are flowing. I feel like we're kind of a little bit maybe on an upward swing right now. I'm sensing that from a lot of people. I hope that you feel the same. Listen, I know we've all been trying to make the most out of these last several months. We've sort of been nose down, plowing ahead, doing our work, trying to create, trying to lead, trying to deliver value for our clients. I know we have. And at the same time, that can be very draining. It can be exhausting to try to persist in the face of adverse circumstances for a long period of time. So I don't know if anybody has told you this, but I just want to say, hey, well done. Good job. Way to persist, way to push through, way to continue seeking to add value to your clients. I know we're all in the same, not in the same situation. We're all in the same storm. We're not all in the same boat is what I've heard, how I've heard it described, which is totally true because we all have different circumstances, but we're all enduring the same storm right now. And I just want to say, hey, you know, well done, way to persist in the midst of it and keep going, keep delivering value, keep your eyes fixed, okay? All right, so that said, I am very excited about today's guest on the show. We had a phenomenal conversation. His name's Gavin Purcell. So Gavin, he's done so many things, worn so many hats. He's a writer, he's a producer. He was the showrunner for Jimmy Fallon's Tonight Show for a number of years, as well as helping write the show. He also helped create I Love You America with Sarah Silverman, and has a ton of other projects, irons in the fire. And we talked about his creative process. We talked about how he produces great work on demand over and over and over again. It's a very long, free-flowing conversation. I really enjoyed it. I think you're going to enjoy it as well. So we have Gavin coming up here in just a minute. Before we dive in, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Bambi. Listen, when running a business, HR issues can kill you. Wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, labor regulations, and HR manager salaries aren't cheap. An average of $70,000 a year. Bambi, spelled B-A-M-B-E-E, was created specifically for small business. You can get a dedicated HR manager, craft HR policy, and maintain your compliance all for just $99 a month. With Bambi, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. Your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, email, or real-time chat. From onboarding to terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day-to-day, all for just $99 a month. Month to month, no hidden fees. You can cancel anytime. Listen, you didn't start your business because you wanted to spend time on HR compliance, right? Let Bambi help. Get your free HR audit today. Go to Bambi.com/accidentalcreative right now to schedule your free HR audit. That's Bambi.com/accidentalcreative, spelled BAM to the BEE.com/accidentalcreative. We thank Bambi for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, it is such a joy to have on the show today, Gavin Purcell. I've been trying to make this happen for a long time. We've been interacting on Twitter, but he's a busy guy. He's got a lot going on. Gavin is the former showrunner for The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. He produces TV. He creates TV. He works with Universal. He worked on I Love You America with Sarah Silverman. He has, let me count, hold on, 13 more Emmy nominations than I do. and he's won two, right? If I'm not mistaken. So Gavin, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast.
Thank you. This is so cool. I listen to the podcast all the time. And as you know, I've read your books and I find them really useful. So I really appreciate it.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, so I've probably just did a hack job of explaining you and kind of what you do. But when you tell people what you do, how do you talk about what you do?
Well, it's interesting because it all depends on like kind of what the section of my life I'm in. I think mostly I focus on ideas and structure and systems, right? Like that's kind of like the three pockets of my life, and they've been that way for a while. It might be weird, but this might be the easiest thing is to kind of talk to you how like I kind of got into it a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is weird because like, you know, I always have a different story than a lot of people in the entertainment industry in that like it wasn't necessarily like plan A from the beginning. Like I didn't dream of a world where I was going to be like a TV producer or even a world in comedy or anything like that. I grew up kind of wanting to write books, and fiction was the, what I kind of wanted to do. And then I ended up in LA, and I went tried to apply to grad school for a fiction writing program, and I didn't get into the time I applied. I was 25, and I was like, oh my God, I only applied to one school. And at the time, it was like one of the greatest schools in the country. So it's not like a surprise that I didn't get in and I wasn't that experienced. But it kind of threw me for a loop, and I got a job as a production assistant, kind of wanting to get out of the restaurant business. And I was like, oh, wow, this is a job and I can do this. And even then, though, I was like, gosh, what is this thing? And I was kind of like jumped from thing to thing and show to show. And then I finally had this realization, which was this cool thing where I discovered, oh, the cool thing about this. And I think now the cool thing about anything in job wise is that like you can really dive in on something you care about and find passion in something important. Right. So like one of the things that I did early on in that time was I grew up in the world of like loving video games, which is such a weird thing. You know, as a 46-year-old man now, it's like I feel like so strange saying that because I'm middle-aged, but like I still play a lot of games and I love them. And I found a company that was specializing in doing what I did at this company called G4. And at that point, I kind of had this realization as like, oh, this is kind of what I can do. And it all started from like this kind of understanding of like what I was passionate and interested in. And then I realized, going back to what I said before, like part of it was the ideas. The ideas came so much simpler and easier to me because I was passionate about it, right? And I was like, this is totally what I'm interested in. The structures were like, oh, I can see because I know this space so well, like how it can work and what it is. And then the systems were something I kind of grew over time of like, I can get from X to Y by doing these things, and they can be placed on different kind of sorts of situational different situations, basically. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does. And you know what's interesting to me about that is like people tend to think of the creative industries, like kind of what you do, where you're, you know, making television or you're writing or you're doing whatever it is. And they think it's just like you're sitting around just kind of like drinking coffee and dreaming and, you know, just kind of like making it up. And it's just this sort of romantic notion of what it is. But those of us who do work, like, you know, I'm writing books, you're creating TV, or like, we know that our systems really are the whole thing, right? It's like, it's you know, you show up and you do your thing, and some days it's great and some days it's not. And hopefully more often than not, it's good, or at least it's good enough to present. But you also produce a lot of bad stuff in the midst of that. But it's the result. I'm not saying you, I'm talking about me now. I'm not talking about you.
I agree. Yeah.
But it's, you know, you have to show up and work a system in order to create good work. And it really almost feels, I think it's very, creativity in that context is very unromantic, you know, in that way.
Sure.
Punctuated. Yeah. It's, I mean, I hate to say that. Like, I know you, I think you've been married 20 years. This is also my 20th anniversary this year. You know, it's almost like a marriage where it's like, listen, most days it's like, you know, we're kind of going through life together, punctuated by these really romantic moments in the midst of it. And that's, it's terrible to describe it that way. That's kind of what creativity is like, right? When you're doing it professionally.
Yeah. I think that, you know, one thing I realized pretty early on was that if I didn't have a system, I wouldn't do things, right? And I think that one of the things, and what's interesting, you know, it's funny because like one of the things I'm doing now, because I'm in this kind of, I was back at the Tonight Show for a year, and now I'm back kind of in this freelance world of developing ideas and on my overall deal and trying to come up with new shows, but also trying to write some stuff and working on some things. One of the hardest things is to create a system for yourself when there's not an outside structure created around it. You know what I mean? And for me, who was at like kind of like show to show to show, I know what a system for a show looks like, right? Like I know, okay, these are the meetings you do per day. this is how you produce output. This is how to manage a writer's room. This is how to manage a studio group. These are these different sort of things. One thing I took a while for me to figure out is like, how do I manage myself, right? Mm-hmm. So actually one of the tools that I wanted to talk to you about because I found so useful is the Pomodoro method. Have you heard about that before?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, please go on and describe it because a lot of people may not have heard of it.
So it's I've been using this app called Focus Time. A good friend of mine, Corey Sika, who was a really well-known, originally a blogger, now runs the style section for the New York Times, recommended to me. He and I worked at Vox Media together. And what it basically is you work in 25-minute chunks, and then you get like a five-minute little break. And my brain needs something like that, right? Like I my wife is a novelist, and she can sit down and work for 4 hours straight and just like work and work and work. And one of the struggles I had, because always throughout my career, my dream has always been, and still kind of is, I want to write, this is going to sound weird maybe for somebody, but not really. I've always wanted to write like middle grade fiction for kids who are like me was when I was a young kid. Like I was like, you know, nerdy, into video games and technology. Like that's the kind of books I've always wanted to write. So like what I was trying to do in this time is like focus on my ideas and my development of TV, but also try to knock some of this out. And the hardest thing for me writing wise always, and this goes for scripted TV or stuff as well, is in order to get my brain into this thing, you do need chunks of time in order just to get the work done. And I would always find myself about an hour in, like petering out. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. And I think if you did an hour a day, you could still get something like that done. It's just going to take you a lot longer. And sometimes, as you probably know, creative projects have a momentum of their own. And then at some point, if you've taken too long, they just kind of like go away. And it's a bummer, but you just lose them, right? Yeah. So I've been trying to figure out how to speed this up. And the Pomodoro method, which is this thing where you do 25 minutes on, and then you get a five-minute break to do whatever you want. And then a bell rings, and you come back for 25 minutes, has made it for me so much easier to work for longer periods. And I don't really know what it is other than some sort of, like, release valve. You know what I mean? Like, literally, I'll go on Twitter for 5 minutes, and instead of, like, staying there for 45 minutes like I might do if I was on that hour-long time, I come right back. So it has worked for me as a system, and I find it so valuable. And I'm sure there are a lot of people out there like me who need that kind of thing. And that's like been the biggest change over the last probably 6 months for me.
I think that's a phenomenal system for anybody who has to make things, because I think, you know, when you're making things, you're wrestling with uncertainty. You don't know where it's going to go. You don't know how long it's going to take. I think just having some boundaries around that, you know, okay, 25 minutes. That's the end boundary of this focus period. First of all, it's just nice to know, like, I just have to work hard for 25 minutes. It's 25, right? Is the, yeah.
25,
I just have to work hard for 25 minutes. I'm going to get a break. Great. Yeah. Fantastic, right? Yeah. I can do that. I can do anything for 25 minutes. It's when it's this big, endless, I don't know when it's going to end, when I'm going to have a breakthrough. I think sometimes we drift and we struggle and all of that. But the second thing that happens, this is actually a real principle of the way our mind works related to creativity, is when we immerse ourselves in something and then we break away from it for a period of time and then we come back to it, often our mind continues working in the background. We don't know that's happening, but our mind is working. So I've had that experience where I've done the same thing, where I've worked for a period, I've taken maybe a 5 or 10 minute break, and I come back and suddenly I have the breakthrough that I've been looking for.
Yeah.
Well, it's because my mind just needed a break from immersing itself in, and instead, you know, needed to go do something else. And when I came back and started focusing again, boom, that dot connected like immediately, you know? And so there's some real scientific undergirding of why that works for creative work as well.
Yeah. And I you know, I read Cal Newport's book, Deep Work, a while back. And I was so jealous, right? When I read that book, I was like, this is what I need, right? This is the thing I need to be able to do. And I've been a while since I read it, but he may have mentioned the system, but like, I remember reading that thinking, why am I not the person that can work for 4 hour chunks, even if I shut off everything, right? Like, even if because I definitely am, you know, I'm not ADD necessarily, but I am distractible as distractible comes. And something about allowing myself this thing really made a huge difference for me. And I can't recommend it more highly in terms of a creative system. And you know, what's interesting now is that, like, when it goes back to that idea of like trying to set like what my lifestyle looks like when I'm at home, it also allows me to put like, okay, I'm going to do, this is going to sound crazy, but I think I'm going to do 4 Pomodoros today. You know what I mean? And know that that's what I want to hit. And then if I get there, great. If one day I don't, but I know that I sat down to do it and I got some of the work done, it's a really good thing.
Right. Well, and that gets to a point, something you just said really sparked an insight in me. And that is that I think one thing that happens as we grow in maturity as creative pros is I think we sometimes we learn to be kinder to ourselves. You know, I think when you're younger and you're sort of on fire and everything is like, you know, piss and vinegar and, you know, you're sort of like, I'm going to prove myself. I think we're really hard on ourselves. I think we're really hard on our output and our productivity and the quality of our work to a point that, I mean, we should strive to be better, right? We should always strive to be better. But I think this kind of expectation escalation begins to paralyze us a bit. And as we get older and we have more context and we can see more nuance and things are more shades of gray instead of black and white, I think over time, I think we become a little kinder on ourselves and we recognize like, this isn't the most important thing I've ever done, right? This is just another layer. And something you said was interesting. You said like, listen, my expectation today is I'm going to do 4 Pomodoros.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful goal to hit versus I'm going to produce this much work or it's going to be of this quality or it's going to, no, focus on your system, put yourself into the system and then whatever your output is for the day, that's what it is. But if you work the system long enough, you're going to produce good work eventually.
Yep. And I think the other thing, what you said just made me think of is one of the things when I was in LA, so I moved to New York in 2008 to work with Jimmy. When I was in LA prior, even when I was at G4, I was always like, my goal was to be like a successful screenwriter at the time because I was like, oh, this is how I can translate my want for storytelling into like financial gain, but a career and all this other stuff. Yeah. And I spent a lot of time on my own working behind the scenes on like writing screenplays and I wrote a bunch of them and I got a little bit of the way there. But one of the things I think that I've also learned maturity wise is that the work is work and it's not about what comes out of it. And I think that's been something that for this current iteration of my creative self that I've really started to embrace in a cool way, which is, I will say I'm lucky enough to have had enough success in my life up until this point that like, I don't really like, I'm not like aching to be like, you know, known in a way. And I'm not famous in any sort of significant way, but like I've had enough, you know, recognition to understand what it feels like to have recognition, which is great. And I know that when you're in your 20s, that's a real need and a want, right? You really want to feel like the world recognizes you. But now when I was doing that screenwriting, I realized looking back on it, so much of it was about the end product, which was me as a successful person, as a successful being lauded by the world or with money or awards or something. And what I think I realize now is the creative work in and of itself is the most valuable thing. And that if I don't do that, and if I don't know that that's the thing, it really has fundamentally shifted how I look at stuff. And it also has opened up my brain to like, oh, I remember I used to paint when I was a kid and I've been painting now again. And stuff like that just starts to make you on the next step of the world you said it before, it's like a maturity. It's like a creative maturity in a way that you mature as a human. You also mature as a creative where it doesn't matter as much what other people think as much as like you feeling like you get out what you want.
Yeah. You know, boy, I love that you said that. Sorry. People can't, we're actually looking at each other right now. People can't see us, but like I did a little like dance when you said that because it's funny as I've gotten older and as I've talked to people who are, I would call them mature creative professionals, people who've been doing this for a couple decades now, and they kind of have grown into their craft a bit and they understand more nuance and context. It's interesting. You say like, people don't know me. Maybe people wouldn't know, unless they're in the industry, they wouldn't know the name Gavin Purcell, right? Necessarily. Maybe. I mean, a lot of people do, but they may not if they're not in the industry. Certainly people in the industry do. But they know your work, right? Your work is deeply influential. And I think the more mature you become as a creative pro, it becomes less about, I want you to know me, and more about, I want you to know my work. I want my work to be influential on you. And I don't care if you know me or not. I don't care if you know my name, but you certainly know my work. And it's as my career also has sort of going on, I take more joy in the fact that somebody like a Gavin Purcell reaches out to me and says like, hey, your book's really been influential. Or I was contacted recently by a music producer. I won't mention any names, but it was somebody who Like, I was like, oh my gosh, like my entire family loves your everything you do, everything you touch,
awesome.
Right?
That's so cool.
And it was one of those things. It's like, that is more gratifying to me than anybody knowing me. It's more about the people I'm influencing who are then like influencing the world because, you know, the world, you know, and it's interesting. I think that sort of, maybe that perspective begins to take hold more as you grow in your career, you start to think it's more, not about me, it's about the work and the influence that's having on the world.
Yeah. And I think it can probably happen in any industry. I think because as creatives, we overanalyze. I know I overanalyze myself all the time, but I think that in part in creative, that there's an early sense, at least from my experience in early creative worlds, when you're young, that it's a competition, right? Mm-hmm. That no matter what, if somebody else sold a script or somebody else got a job that you wanted, you're like, I could have had that job. I just need to grind harder. I need to be better at my whatever, my communication, or I need to be better at like finding an agent that's going to represent me in a way. And ultimately, you know, if you turn all that feeling and you can put it back into the work, and then the satisfaction comes from doing the work itself, like that's the end game, right? And then I think you're right. Then people recognize stuff and they really see what you put into it. Like I always think about when, you know, it's funny you mentioned that about like having people recognize the work. Like I always believe the work we did on The Tonight Show and The Late Night Show, like, it was so cool to be at a place where like lots of people saw stuff, and like that's such an awesome ability to have. And if you can just be in a place where like you can collaborate and do something cool that people like that is so much of your creative value. And if you can get that out, and it might not even have to be like something that big. Like I read a couple newsletters now that are written by groups of people, or I, you know, actually really, there's a guy named Robin Sloan, who's an author that I really appreciate, and he writes books, but he used to work at Twitter and he was an early blogger, and now he has a newsletter that I read. And when it comes out, like I really read it. And like those kinds of audiences, you know, really mean a lot now versus, you know, when I was in my 20s, where it was like, what does the world think of me? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it was more that kind of thing.
Yeah. Hey, we're going to dive back into the conversation with Gavin in just a minute. Before we do, I want to let you know today's episode is also sponsored by Policy Genius. So it's the shortest month of the year, meaning you've got slightly less time to check off your February to-dos. Luckily, Policy Genius can help you check off two big items with ease. Compare life insurance rates and save 50% or more in the process. That means more cash to put towards the things you care about, whatever they may be. Plus, there's absolutely no hassle. Their licensed experts work for you, not the insurance companies, so they can offer unbiased advice when you need it. Here's how it works. First, head to policygenius.com, and in minutes, you can work out how much coverage you need and compare quotes from top insurers to find your best price. Policy Genius will compare policies starting as little as $1 a day. You might even be eligible to skip the in-person medical exam. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team will handle all the paperwork and red tape. If you hit any speed bumps during the application process, they'll take care of everything. That kind of service has earned Policy Genius a 5-star rating across over 1,600 reviews on Trustpilot and Google. So if you're worried that March is just around the corner and you've barely gotten anything done, take a deep breath. Policy Genius will help you make the most out of this short month in minutes. You could save 50% or more by comparing quotes and feel good knowing your loved ones will be taken care of if anything were to happen. Go to policygenius.com to get started. Policy Genius. When it comes to insurance, it's nice to get it right. And now back to our conversation with Gavin Purcell. All right. I want to ask a very specific question that I think is going to be relevant to people who are listening right now, because we're all learning how to do work in a new way right now. Yeah. And probably a lot of this isn't going to go back to the way it was. You're probably going to learn some things and probably adapt forever moving forward.
Of course.
So you were the showrunner for The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon when a global pandemic hit, and all of a sudden now you can't go in the studio, you can't do new shows, right?
Yeah.
And you all kind of just had to turn on a dime and figure out how are we gonna make this work? Are we done? Like that had to be a legit question for you. Like, are we just done? Is this it?
It was pretty scary, because I think at one point it was, you know, when it first, I mean, it was all we always remember is the day that the NBA shut down and Tom Hanks said he had it, right? And that was like, oh man, this is, and we had a show that night, and it was we did one show without an audience, and after that show, it was like no one's coming in, right? Like we all were like, we can't do this anymore. We're not coming in. And I think one thing that Jimmy felt pretty early on, which I really give him a lot of credit for, is that he recognized that A, people would want to see our show still, that there would be value in having the experience of watching a show like ours go through this, but also B, especially he and I, you know, when we first started Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, he and I, it was the two of us and one other person and then an editor, and we made these video blogs early on prior to Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, and we kind of knew that we could do something, right? Like, it wasn't like we were helpless. Like, we had enough of the kind of like can-do attitude of like, we know how he, you know, he's got an iPhone, he can shoot stuff, we can come up with ideas, we can create a whole system around this. We were actually kind of lucky in that we had just gotten on Slack, the whole show on Slack, like a month before this happened, which I think ended up being super valuable for this time period specifically. But, you know, a lot of it was just like figuring out, okay, well, we have four, are we on TV? Because the first week we were showing repeats on TV, but we were making a show for YouTube only. And that wasn't that crazy because you could make a 6 to 8 minute show. And the first show was just, and I should also shout out Jimmy's wife, Nancy, is a producer, Nancy Fallon, and she was incredibly helpful because you had another person in his home who had production skills. But just being able to tap into that and having her be able to kind of work in there was a huge difference. And then it just became a lot of like, okay, why don't we try this? Why don't we try that? Why don't we see if this works? And ultimately, the good news is it was like, oh, this isn't that different from what we were doing before. We just have to change all the systems, right? So like going back to the ideas had to change a little bit. But you know, you've written about this, and I think it's something like, constraints are good on ideas, yeah. Right? So yeah. When you have constraints, you know, a studio show is a constraint in itself, right? You have 200 people in the audience, so there's certain things you can't do live. There's certain things you have to do as pre-tapes. You have whatever, 8 cameras. You're not designed necessarily to go out into the world. Whereas when you're at home in that show, the constraints are different. Like you have 1 camera. You have the ability to like use Jimmy's amazing daughters who are super funny and do a different thing there. It just becomes a little bit about like how you take the constraints you're in and then iterate and create within those constraints. And I think that's really what came out of it. So the two things that I think that helped those shows and made them really special were, one, Jimmy's willingness to really go for it and to kind of like understand the value of what that meant at the time to everybody, especially because I think in early stages of the pandemic, people were looking for comfort and feeling good and like an awareness and something where people could feel like, oh, this is, people are going through this, we're not alone. And then two, just like, you know, it looks like turn on a dime, but really it's like small changes, right? Like it's like figuring it out over time and having the freedom and the wherewithal to be able to say, okay, this isn't working this way, so let's try it this way. And then if it didn't work that way, going back and then trying it a different way. Like it is an iteration process that you have to kind of keep doing.
Yeah, and oh boy, you know, I think so many people just gave up. I think that happened. And also, truthfully, like you have the constraints, you know, you talked about the constraints you had, but also, you know, taking into consideration the unique assets that you had. I mean,
yeah.
You know, like you said, Jimmy's wife being a producer and being able to help on that front, you know, his family is just adorable. I mean, come on. But also, you know, he has this sort of unique way of empathizing. Like he feels like he is just in the room with you. When you watch him on TV, like he feels like he's just in the room with you, you know? Mm-hmm. He was uniquely capable of doing a show like that. And you guys spotted that. You guys recognized that. I think a lot of personalities would not have come across in the same way, you know?
It's just, and everybody has a moment in time. And I think for him particularly, that was a great moment because, yeah, I mean, I know that guy as well as anybody, and he is like genuinely believes it. He's a good person in his heart, and he wants people to feel good. Do you know what I mean? And I think that, you know, this has been a really like up and down time for the world, but that was a time, specifically that time especially, who I think he wanted to make sure that like he could deliver that message of joy and feeling good. And it was cool to be able to be part of it for sure.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so let's talk about what's next for you. What are you working on right now? What are you excited about?
Well, I'm working on, under my development deal, I'm coming up with a bunch of different, you know, show ideas and things like that. I'm also weirdly like, I think I mentioned this earlier, but like I grew up pretty nerdy, and one of the things I'm looking into is like trying to find like really weird old science fiction and fantasy stories that I can option and try to make TV shows out of, which is kind of fun. Like I'm dipping into like, you know, I was one of those kids who read, you know, 10 books a week or whatever at some point, but you know, that's not that, 5 books a week. But like I was a voracious reader, and I remember, you know, comic books, but also novels. And so that's something I'm looking into doing. And then, you know, like in my kind of like early creative time in the mornings, I'm trying to do that thing where I can write that those books that I wanted to write, which aren't like impossible to write, you know, it's not, but it's still the kinds of stories that I want to tell, I want to put my time into. And so, but again, that's like my long-term like soul goal. Do you know what I mean? Like that's the goal for my soul. And it's an important thing always to kind of like at this point in my life to kind of balance out that with the work that I need to do to both support my family and also like to kind of work in my career world. Oh, the other thing I'm super interested in right now is I'm really, and this goes into the development side of things, is I'm really fascinated with what's happening on Twitch. Mm-hmm. I feel like Twitch is a really interesting space, and maybe your listeners know about it or not. If you don't know, Twitch is a streaming site, you know, not unlike a YouTube or anything else, but mostly it's populated by people that grew up with video games and spend time with video games. But the biggest difference is it has built in, and people are building in more all the time, interactive prompts into it. So I'm really fascinated to see where the world of video interactivity are kind of crossing over, especially growing up, you know, as a big gamer and still playing a lot of games. I really see that as a place where especially people say under 30 right now have just, they're always been gaming. So I think that feels like some significant piece of our entertainment future that is happening in real time on Twitch. And it's rudimentary right now. And people have been talking about this for, say, 20 years. But it's now to the point where the tool set is so strong that you're seeing really interesting stuff start to happen there, I feel.
Yeah. Like. Yeah. Okay. One thing I want to point out about all of this that you're sharing is like, so I talk about this principle called unnecessary creating or back burner creating, right? Where you have like, you cannot look to your job to be the sum total of your creative engagement. You just can't, right? Like your creativity is always going to overflow into other areas. And if you're looking for your job to do that, then you're probably inviting creative block at some point. Yep. And I mean, you have a job probably that's like literally you kind of just come up with stuff is kind of your job right now, right? It's like the most perfectly suited creative job in the world. And yet at the same time, you're talking about like, I've got this going on and that going on, and I'm kind of playing around with these ideas and I'm working on some books and I've got, you know, I think that is an excellent model for all of us. I mean, myself included, right? Like we need to have stuff outside of our on-demand work that we're doing as a way to stay creatively sane.
Totally. I also think that we have to keep learning. Like one of the other big book series I've read is about curiosity. I'm a huge, huge believer that part of the reason that I'm as successful as I've been in my life is that I've been curious for a very long time. And I am very curious. Like just example, like last week I've been getting into, I'm not a giant crypto person, but I'm fascinated by it. I still feel kind of angry that I was aware of Bitcoin in 2011 and I could have bought some, but I couldn't figure it out. So I'm still angry about that, but whatever. Somebody showed me this thing called what are called NFTs right now. And I don't know if you know what an NFT is. It's a non-functional fungible token, which means basically you can create a piece of art that can have a scarcity attached to it. And it can be digital only, but it can grow in value. And every time the piece of art gets sold, you can build into that piece of art the fact that the creator gets paid again, right? And like, ultimately, does that have anything to do with storytelling? Not necessarily, but like what's interesting to me is like, oh, that's happening and I'm so curious about it that I wanted to learn about it, but then it's starting to like infect other parts of my creative life. So it'll start spiraling into thinking about like, oh, is this a story or is there a show here? And like, that's how I approach like everything in the world, right? And I actually remember this really weird story. I won't say the guy's name because he knows what it is. But when I was at G4, we had a deal briefly with the AP to make technology stories for news, right? Because we were a technology channel and they wanted us to kick out like 2-minute technology stories once a day. And I remember he came up to me one day and he said, Gavin, I don't have any ideas for these stories anymore. I don't know what to tell you. Like, I've done 3 weeks of them and I'm run out of ideas. And I got kind of mad, and I'm better about not getting mad at people I work with. But I said, you know, this person, look out the window. There are like six things out this window that I could tell you right now. It could be a technology, like that's an air conditioning unit on top of that building. Like, what's the most hardcore, interesting air conditioning unit? Like, what is, you know, what that airplane that just flew by, like, what's happening with navigation systems? Like, it's literally just like, it's all there. And that's what goes back to what I was saying earlier about the passion about gaming for me. It's like, you have to find what things you care about, because those are the things that carry you through day to day. And it will all come back around and be part of your creative work. But if you're not actively seeking those things, you're going to get blocked, I think.
Yeah. I love that so much. That is, I mean, listen, everybody should go back and listen to the last 5 minutes of this conversation, because that really is the whole game right there. What you just said is the whole game. It is stoking your curiosity, asking questions, looking in places nobody else is looking, and just looking long enough to find the answer. The answer is there. You just have to look long enough and look in enough places to find the answer. That's awesome. Gavin, if people want to come find you and learn more about you and your work, where would you want them to go?
Well, geez, my Twitter handle is where I probably spend most of my time, which is mostly me making not very funny observations about the world or learning stuff or tweeting. Actually, I will say I tweet there about things that I'm finding interesting. So that it's at Gavin Purcell. That's the best place right now. I mean, I think mostly, you know, watch the Tonight Show. It's super fun still. You know, go back and find I Love You America if you have Hulu, because you may or may not have seen it. It's just as valuable and as important now as it was then. I'm still heartbroken that show got canceled, because it was like two seasons and I think we could have been going for a long time based on the political world that we live in. But those are important things that I've worked on. And then, you know, look for whatever the next thing I kind of do is. It's an exciting thing.
Amazing. Well, Gavin, thanks so much for taking the time to share your experience and your wisdom with us today.
Thank you, and thanks, Todd, for your books. They're really useful, and I think people should buy your books. So go out there and buy Todd's books.
Thank you. I didn't ask him to do that, by the way. And as always, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or at accidentalcreative.com. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.